unbelievably good Celtic performance. Game 7 against the 76ers yesterday. Not such a great weekend for the Red Sox. Chad will have details. Alan Adams with movie reviews in the 5 o'clock hour on Pass the Popcorn. We'll check out the weather for the week and see what's brewing. The good, the bad, and the ugly, the calendar, the birthday list, and we'll see what people are talking about on social media. It's the grapevine before we wrap it up at 6 o'clock tonight. We get things underway this afternoon, though, by welcoming to the program an acclaimed director, cinematographer, and producer. He is a 3-time Peabody Award winner and an Emmy Award winner as well. His new documentary comes to HBO on May 26th. It's called Being Mary Tyler Moore. We're happy to be joined this afternoon by director James Adolphus.
Hi, Rich. How you doing?
I'm great.
Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, man. I just love the film. It was so good. As a big Mary Tyler Moore fan, what drew you to Mary's story?
Rich, I have to be honest with you. You know, before I was invited to be a part of this project, I had never seen a single frame of anything Mary had ever done. Not a single episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and I managed to skirt through both undergrad and graduate film school without seeing ordinary people.
So now that you've met her, do you feel like you know her, and how do you feel about her after diving into this project for what has been about 3 years, right?
3.5, almost 4 years now of getting to this place in the journey. And yes, Rick, I think I know Mary Tyler Moore intimately. And it's a strange thing to get to know someone and feel like you know them and you have an intimate knowledge of who they are, the nuance of their character. But you can only get to know them through the words of their book and their performances and the interviews. I mean, what is on screen in the film is what I had to use in order to get to know who Mary Tyler Moore was.
Well,
I think she's a different person than who our audience believes that she is or did until we made this film.
Absolutely. Well, I love the fact, too, that you told her story largely in her words. And I think it made it a very powerful couple of hours to hear what she had to say about herself.
I agree. I think giving Mary the first word, the last word in this film was powerful, but it was always the aim. I started this journey reading Mary's autobiography, and you know, I read it a few times before I watched her body of work and dug into that. And I wanted Mary to have a chance to speak for herself, especially because she wasn't here to participate in the film. But it was, of course, extremely challenging to portray a version of Mary that was present within the pages of her autobiography and then do it on screen. Because unfortunately, you know, Mary passed away without ever recording an audio version of her book. And we didn't have that. And we didn't want to use AI technology to mimic her voice. And we didn't want to bring in someone prominent to be a voiceover artist and read pages of, you know, passages from Mary's autobiography. So we embarked on what we felt like at many times was an impossible journey of portraying Mary's life and legacy in her own words from her point of view.
And you also did speak with a number of people, a couple of friends of our show, the wonderful Treva Silverman, the late Ed Asner. But I really thought it was effective that you only used their voice, and that kept our focus on Mary.
You know, I can't take credit for that. You know, we were probably 8 months into the edit, approaching the first rough cut, and our esteemed producer, Lena Waithe, hadn't yet seen any of the film. She was really eager, and Mariah Remmett, the film's editor, and I spent a lot of time borrowing from pre-1950s cinema to use as metaphors in the film, a lot of visual metaphors for parts of Mary's life that we didn't have access to. Oddly enough, before we stumbled upon a trove of archival material, 8 months into the edit, there was really a dearth of behind-the-scenes content, home movie content of Mary. We really only had our performances to work with. And we had a lot of archival stand-ins for Mary's life. And when Lena got around to watching the cut, she responded a lot to how Mary's life felt when we lived within the archive. And at that time, we were still doing other traditional things in documentaries, like cutting to Ed Asner, his actual recorded interview, because we did have 2-camera interviews for everyone in the film. But Lena loved how the archive felt. She loved, as a super fan, of course, she thought it was a lot more impactful. And, you know, she was like, yeah, let's give the audience really what they want. And what I want is more of Mary. So I understand why you guys are doing this traditional doc thing, but why don't you just lean into the art, lean into the archive, let's cover everything up. And so we did. We covered everything up, and I think you're right. It makes the film a lot more engaging, and it's a very special journey to be on.
Were you surprised that Lena was such a big fan of Mary's work?
I don't think, you know, I had just embarked on a working relationship with Lena. We were finishing a documentary on sneaker culture for the late Quibi network. And I don't think anything at that point had surprised me about Lena. I think she's a fascinating and brilliant human being who, I think, like me, has had a journey, an unconventional journey in finding her place in the industry. I think that for Robert Levine, he was incredibly shocked and surprised that Lena had that Mary meant so much to Lena. So much so that, you know, Lena has a tattoo of Mary Tyler Moore on her body.
Oh, wow.
you know, I think that if Lena wasn't in Vanity Fair in 2018, if Robert hadn't come across that article and seen the photo, the Annie Leibovitz photo of Lena watching Mary Tyler Moore show at home, we wouldn't be here today. You know, Lena within those pages expressed how much she loved Mary, and that in her career, she had always hoped to make a film about Mary Tyler Moore. I think for Robert, because he was surprised surprised that an unapologetically black queer woman from the South Side of Chicago, you know, shouted out Mary Tyler Moore in such a profound way. And so Robert reached out to Lena, and they spent 5 or 6 hours together at the estate. And by the end of that day, Robert handed her the keys to Mary's life and legacy.
We're talking with James Adolphus. So the new film is called Being Mary Tyler Moore. It premieres on HBO on May 26th. She was certainly an independent career woman, but her story is one of contradictions, including the fact that she wasn't always comfortable with being labeled a feminist.
That's very true. Mary was not very comfortable being labeled a feminist. And you know, Mary's not here to speak for herself, but I think about the moment in the film where Mary is referred to as a feminine feminist. And my mom has now seen the film twice. She was there at the premiere at South by Southwest and again at the screening and at the Minneapolis St. Paul Film Festival. And we spoke about being a feminist twice. And my mom grew up Catholic like Mary, and she grew up in a conservative home. And the only way my mother, just as Mary, was able to move out of the house at 18 years old was, in the arms of a man as a married woman. Polite society demanded that. And I think Mary was a fierce and staunch supporter of feminism, but polite society and the stereotype of a bra-burning feminist were at odds with each other for Mary. And even though there was never a moment where women banded together and removed their bras to burn them, this is a myth and that has attached itself to the second wave, Mary didn't grow up in a world where she could identify with that version of activism. I personally can. I love being out on the streets, but I understand that Mary was not that woman. I also understand that Mary, you know, and it's very present within the Susskind interview of the film. Ooh. Mary was a staunch like advocate of feminism.
And that interview, by the way, is so powerful to watch her reaction and to remember that there was a time when that was, not that long ago, a pretty commonplace approach here in America.
It is phenomenal. When we came across that interview, knowing that it's, you know, Mary was fresh off the Dick Van Dyke Show, that she was one of the most famous people in this country at that moment, a highly successful woman, and it still didn't matter to David Susskind, who was a mainstream television host, that American patriarchy could so blatantly question the value of Mary's life. Both was shocking, but it was something I understood quite deeply. I'm Black and Puerto Rican, and I feel like patriarchy is always telling me who I am and what I should be striving to achieve. It's regularly informing me in different places in my life, like it has with Mary, where the glass ceiling is.
There were expectations of Mary, certainly after Dick Van Dyke and then after the huge success of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and she certainly flipped those upside down when she took the role in Ordinary People. But as she pointed out in a couple of different conversations in the film, there were elements of her in all of those characters, but certainly Ordinary People seemed to let her express a part of herself that the public hadn't seen.
You know, I haven't lived a very forward-facing life. I've been a cinematographer for 2 decades, and you know, this is my directorial debut as a filmmaker. I can't imagine what it means to be forward-facing for decades on end, to be known only as a person, you know, who's inspired millions, obviously, but you are known as the woman with the eternal smile, to present that day in and day out. Even as satisfying as it is knowing you're an inspiration to a country, still has to be exhausting. And I know that in the company of her most trusted loved ones, Mary was able to just turn that off, be a normal human being, and be a woman who was allowed to be vulnerable, was allowed to be human and not have to hide the fact that she has experienced and continue to experience loss and suffering. I think that Robert Redford was a very smart individual for recognizing that, of course, that version existed within Mary Tyler Moore. And how powerful would that be to see someone we think of as the opposite, as a better reflection of who all of us are, human.
The archival footage that you use is so powerful, and perhaps for me personally, most of all, that wonderful video of her bridal shower, when I felt like we really got a glimpse into the person she was around those closest to her.
Rick, we were 8 months in of a 10-month edit into the process before we stumbled upon that trove of material that is featured heavily in the third act of the film, including the bridal shower. And it remains my favorite sequence in the film because Mary's entire life was a guarded life. And I think the bridal shower is, you know, magic because it is Mary's one unguarded moment in the entire film. And I wish we had, wish half the film was unguarded. I wish Mary was here to be unguarded with us. But I thank our lucky stars that at the 11th hour, we found that moment.
And it seems, and maybe I'm oversimplifying, that she had to, certainly with Robert Levine, she was able to find herself and find a level of happiness. He makes a tuna sandwich sound like the most romantic thing in the world, but also that she kind of had to step away from being Mary Tyler Moore to really find herself and be at peace.
I feel so grateful, you know, for one, that Dr. Robert Levine, he's become a very close friend, but that Mary was able to end that part of life, you know, in her 40s, find true love. And I really do think that Mary and Robert, their love was the truest. It makes me, I'm happy knowing that Mary was given that. You know, I think Mary, still with all of her success in her life, had to deal with the ageism that comes with Hollywood. Even after the success of Ordinary People, I don't think that Mary was allowed, given a role that was as significant as who she portrayed on Ordinary People, or even, you know, the television series she's most known for. that Mary had Robert and that in their love she could beat alcoholism, and that love and support she could dedicate the last third of her life to juvenile diabetes activism. For her and for millions of folks who struggle with diabetes, I think that's a blessing. A lot of folks that we interviewed for the film, including Rosie O'Donnell, when asked, what is Mary's most important legacy? Half our respondents said that it was her juvenile diabetes research. That advocacy was able to raise $2 billion just in when she was here, and another $500 million since she's gone. And you know, she's helped to make so many lives a little more bearable, a little easier, navigating such a horrendous disease that did ravage parts of Mary's life toward the end.
So her last show has been off the air now for more than 45 years. There probably is a generation out there who's not sure who Mary Tyler Moore was. When this film drops on HBO later this month, how can her story both inform people in their lives here in 2023 and inspire people going forward?
I think Mary's life is an inspiration both then and now, because we are still struggling with so many of the same issues that she had to deal with. It's obviously really unfortunate, but this country is in a huge fight for where the direction of women's rights and privacy are going. One would think that we would have overcome this in Mary's era. I mean, the roles that she played on both the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show embodies progress. They are the... But it feels like, you know, the pages are being flipped backwards. We are moving into a space that is unknown and yet known and dangerous. It feels scary. If Mary's life and her legacy and her story can remind folks of how far we had come and how quickly it is we are moving backwards, I think just there is reason enough for folks to watch this film in 2 weeks when we release on HBO.
Well, it is a wonderful film, Being Mary Tyler Moore. I loved your work on Soul of a Nation as well. James, it's wonderful to have a chance to talk with you today.
Rick, I'm grateful that we had the time to speak today. I had a lot of fun.